Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Parshas Chukas. A lot of things happening in the Parsha. Quick review. We'll go back. Let's hit some insights. Torah portion opens up with the red heifer. That is considered the ultimate chuk. Chuk, which is named the Parsha Chukas, means a statute. A statute means a law that we don't even try to rationalize or try to understand. Okay? We recognize that it completely makes no sense to our human minds, that is. Of course, it does make sense, it's just we're not mentally capable. Okay? And in reference to that, a person should know in general that it's, this is beautiful, this is the Rambam, I'm going to put it in English though. Maimonides says the following, it's axiomatic that since the laws of the Torah are the wisdom of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, therefore any human inability to comprehend them merely indicates a limitation on the student, not the teacher. Okay, we often do the opposite. As soon as we see we don't understand something in the Torah, we think there's something wrong, Chalila, with God or the Torah. Or it was, you know, it's an ancient archives. Back then it was relevant. Now it's not. No. By the way, it's just a... And it's, yeah, an essential component of wisdom means to understand that... they say the ultimate wisdom is to know that you don't know. You know what I'm saying? That's an essential component of wisdom, to understand that man's failure to understand the truth doesn't make the truth not true. Okay? The fact that we're capable of understanding any word of the Torah doesn't make the Torah true. It's just a testimony to the greatness of the human mind, that God made the human mind in such a fashion that it can grasp some divine wisdom. Okay, that's some initial musr for you. Zeis chukas haTorah, red heifer. Okay, proceeding of the red heifer, all that's done to it, we'll try to talk a little about why it's so, it's considered the ultimate statute, okay? From there, the Torah portion talks about how we reached Kadesh, and there Miriam passed away, and we wanted water. And so there we learn that the 40 years in the desert, we have the well of Miriam, right? We have the well of water in the merit of Miriam. Okay? We have the clouds of glory. That's where they learn this. Okay? Right? The well of Miriam was from this we learned, because as soon as she died, there was no water. Okay? And we all know the other, there was three constant miracles. The other constant miracles, the clouds of glory, Anani HaKovid, that was in merit of Aaron. Okay? And Moshe was, merit of Moshe, we had the manna. Okay? And when Miriam died, the well stopped. When Aaron died, the cloud stopped. But they both returned in merit of Moses. In merit of Moshe, we got the well back, and we got the clouds back, right? But when Moshe died, all three of them were gone permanently. And if you want to go back even further in history in this, Avraham. The Medrash says that in merit of Avraham, we got all three. You ready for this? Okay, keep this in mind. In merit of Avram with the angels, he didn't know they were angels. They came, you know, strangers. Remember the third day of his brief milah? He was recovering, major surgery, right? An older man. And he sees him and he runs out in the sun. He says, please sit down underneath the tree, right? Therefore, his children merited to have the clouds of glory that sheltered them, right? In the merit of that act of kindness. You see how long Kodesh Baruch Hu pays out an act of kindness to future generations. I'm trying to plant a seed in you guys, because we're going to hit something in reference to that later. Okay? And Avram said, have a little bit something to drink, right? And therefore, right, the well of water for his children. He merited the well of water for his children 40 years in the desert. And he gave him to eat. He gave him a lot of things to eat. Remember, he slaughtered three cows, right? Gave him the finest choice of the cow. And other things he brought in merit of that act, his children were zeichah to get the man. Okay. Keep that in mind, how an act of chesed, kindness, Hashem pays off in future generations, because we'll hit that. So, the people gathered and they complained, you know, we don't have water, what's going to happen? So, Hashem tells Moshe, take the staff, pay attention, take the staff and speak to the rock, right? And water shall come out. What did Moshe do? He struck the rock. And he struck it once, actually struck it twice, and finally the water came out, and that was considered the sin of Moshe. And we'll have to examine that. What does that mean? That it was considered a quote-unquote sin for Moshe, and because of this, right after Hashem says, because you didn't believe me, and you didn't sanctify me in the name, in the eyes of Israel, therefore you're not going to bring this congregation into the land of Israel. And Moshe and Aaron, interesting, Aaron gets, also is responsible. They both die in the desert with these people, okay, for this act. After that, okay, we sent messengers to Edom, and we said, listen, you know, we took on the yoke of the prophecy, right, that could have been yours. What I'm talking about is the prophecy to Avram that your children will be a stranger and enslaved in a land not theirs for 400 years, really, which is on all the seed of Avram, right? Which means Esav, right, and Yaakov. But Esav and Yaakov split. They kind of made an agreement there, right, with the selling of the birthright. And therefore, we took on that yoke, and we just served the time of that prophecy in Egypt. That's what is explained here. And now we're coming to the land of Israel. We're asking you, like a mensch, let us pass through your land. And Edom, typical Edom, came out with a heavy hand and with a sword and said, you know, don't come through our land unless you want war. So we detoured around them. Okay, we detoured around them. Then we came to Hor Hahar. Okay, and Hor Hahar, it was told to Moshe by Hashem that it's time for Aaron to die. Okay, so in this Parsha, we have Miriam dies first, then Aaron dies, and Moshe's told he's going to die in this Parsha. Okay. So, after this, Aaron's death, it's an elaborate ceremony. The clothes are put on his son, Eleazar. From Aaron, he's going to be the next Kohen Gadol. Okay? After that, it says, the Kanani heard that the children of Israel were sitting in the desert, and they fought against us. And from here, they learn that Aaron's merit, we have the 40 years of the clouds of glory. Why? Because when the clouds of glory were around us, no enemy could see us. Aaron died, the clouds of glory dispersed, and therefore this Kanani, this Melech Arad, the king of Arad of Canaan, battled against us. Okay? Now, if you'll ask the question... this is a review, but if you'll ask the question, if we got the merit of all three of these back with Moshe, right? So why did the well go away when Miriam passed away? And why did the clouds of glory go away when Aaron passed away? Okay, so the answer to that is to show, for the people to realize what they were missing. These great tzaddikim, in their merit alone, we got these things. It happened that Moshe's merit was so great, we got him back. But right, if we just got him from Moshe, you would not have realized that it was Aaron that we got the clouds of glory. It was Miriam's, it was their tzitkis, their greatness, their righteousness that we had these gifts. Therefore, when they died, it disappeared to show us that what we were missing when these great people left. Okay? Okay, so the Kanani fought against us. And we call the place Charma, which means destruction, and we took vengeance upon them. The first battle, they captured one maidservant, and we took vengeance against them, and we were victorious. From there, we traveled again, and once again, the people complained. Again, whenever it says Ha'am in the Torah, it's talking about the mixed multitude there of Rav. And the reason that we are considered accomplices to the crime, as we mentioned last week, is that anytime... you don't rebuke, you know, your fellow Jew, and whether we like it or not, they're with us, these like false converts, then you're held as an accomplice. So, therefore, these people again complain, about the man, once again. We have nothing but this light bread that's completely enveloped within us. There's no waste product. It's impossible. We're going to blow up. That's basically what they said. You know, it can't go on forever. So Hashem sent burning or fiery snakes. Snakes of fire. How do they translate this? Fiery serpents. Okay? Interesting. And they bit the people, and a lot of them died. And then Moshe, of course, intervenes on behalf of Israel and prays for them. And Hashem says, take a nachash nechoshes, play on words. Actually, Moshe himself knew to do it. What am I saying? Nachash nechoshes means a copper snake. Make a snake out of copper. How did Moshe know to make it out of copper? Because of the play of words of nachash, snake, nechoshes, copper. Same three first letters, and he put it on a staff, and he put it up in the air, and when they looked at it, they got healed. Well, I have to discuss that, but we'll discuss why that worked, but I'll tell you something. They were healed, and it's interesting. You know what? Everything you see in the secular world is some either distortion or truth or misconception or a basic fact from the Torah. And we talked about the other week, 2 weeks ago, about, you know, tying a string around your finger to remember something. And I got that from the tzitzis. You know, you're supposed to remember all the mitzvahs. And we put this like this and kiss when we say the parts of the tzitzis. The serpent on the staff, when they looked at it, they got healed. This is the medical profession. To this day, has this as a symbol. You ever see it? The snake on the staff? Oh, right there. Isn't that amazing? This is where it comes from. They looked at it, got it. You know, it doesn't make sense. Okay. All right. So from there, they traveled again, the children of Israel. They went to Avos, and a bunch of other travels are mentioned. And then it's mentioned some interesting things about Arnon. Was that some historical information that doesn't seem relevant to us, but we'll see that it was. And then all of a sudden after that, it mentions all these things. Then it talks about the well again. And they sang a song over the well. Okay? This is chapter 21, verse 17. Right? And we'll have to discuss why they sang a song at this particular point at the well. Well, I'll just tell you right now. Well, I'll hold it. I'll keep you in suspense. Okay? After that, we fought two great giants. Two separate wars. I don't want to lump them together because each one was so great. They said even without their fortified city, it'd be hard to defeat them. And even if they weren't giants and it was just a fortified city, it'd be hard to defeat. How much more so that they were giants and they were in a fortified city. And one was named Sichon, they were brothers, and the other name was Og. And they didn't need each other's help. You know, usually that would be the case. You know, brothers would call each other, ally nations. They didn't call it. They were so sure on their own strength. As I say in Virginia, Washoe, that they didn't call on each other's help. Sichon, huge giant, and Moshe went there and defeated him, and we conquered the certain land that Sichon had conquered, which was Moab. Another planting a lot of seeds. Okay, remember that. That's all that about. Why does the Torah bother to tell us that? Okay. And we took all the surrounding towns and so forth and so on. And then we go on, and then towards the end of the Parsha, we get to the land of Og. And by the way, it seems that Og had many sons, each one as mighty as he. Right? And another war, but Moshe feared this time. We'll have to discuss why it doesn't seem that he feared Sichon, but here it said he feared, and we know that because Hashem says to Moshe in the very towards the very end of the Parsha, chapter 21, verse 34, Al tira oiso, don't be fearful of him. I'm going to give him in your hands like I did Sichon. So why was he fearful of Og? And he wasn't fearful of his equally giant brother, Sichon. We defeated them, and that's how the Parsha ends. Okay. First off, let's talk about the Parah Aduma, the red heifer. This is what the famous statement that was said by Kohelas, by King Solomon, who said, I thought I found wisdom, I see it's far from me, when he came to this. the statute of the red heifer. Solomon is known as the wisest of all men, right? And yet this was beyond him. Now, why? Because the way it worked was the following. You took the ashes of the red heifer, right? You, the pure Kohen, you're Tahor. Okay, we got to use these terms, guys. Tahor and Tameh. Spiritually defiled and spiritually clean. Tahor is clean. Okay, I'm going to start using these words. So you, the Kohen, who is Tahor, you're going to sprinkle these on someone that's Tameh, and he will become pure Tahor, but you will become Tameh. Right? It makes no sense. It purifies the defiled, but it defiles the one who's pure. Right? Doesn't seem to make any sense. Okay. So, that's number one. And yet, with all that, we find that there is a reason for it. There is a reason for it. It's supposed to be no reason, and yet the Medrash goes into detail, and Rashi brings down a lot of it, which is, you know what? This is a para aduma, a female cow, right? And we built the egel zahav, a little cow. Let the mother come after and clean up after the son. In other words, let the red heifer atone for the sin of the golden calf. Right? And therefore there's a bunch of similarities back and forth. Right? And there's a lot of things that go on. And, you know, one is Tamima, you know, and that's the way we were, wholesome, right? Pure, before the golden calf. And they bring a lot of things that are, you know, similar to show how this one atones for this one. Okay. So that's a couple questions so far we're asking. Right? And now a third question is, it's not worded correctly. Of course it is. But I'm saying, according to what we're saying, you would think that it's worded the following. Zeis chukas hapara. This is the statute of the para. That's not what the Torah says. Zeis chukas hatorah. This is the statute of the Torah. Okay? So, we're going to answer the last one first. And by the way, this Torah portion is the answer to Korach. Korach's name, even his name, spells the same. If you rearrange his name, it spells Chaker, one who delves into things too much. Too much of a Chacham. You know, a talis, that's all Techelis. Do you need a string of Techelis? A house of all Torah? Do you still need mezuzah in such a house that just has a piece of Torah? Remember? Remember, these were Korach's type of questions. Right? So Korach was a chaker. He delved. And you need a shmirah. You need a safeguard sometimes in delving it beyond the emunah peshuta element. The simple, unabiding faith. Blind faith! That's what paraduma is, right? That was the mistake of Korach. He couldn't accept something blindly on his level for Sesach. Okay, so the Torah, right after the parsha of Korach, here's your answer, Korach. Zeis chukas ha-Torah. The Torah is a chuk. If you don't understand why Aaron's the Kayan, or why Moshe was picked, or anything else, there are certain things that are a chuk. The Torah words this, Zeis chukas ha-Torah. This is the statute of the Torah. And not the para to teach us a number of things. Number one, there's certain things in Torah, in life, you're not going to understand. It's going to be a chok. You know what that is? Sadik v'ralo, rasha v'tayvlo. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do good things happen to bad people? That's what it is, says the Medrash. Zeis chukas ha-Torah. It's one of those chukim. We discussed different reasons. The basic line, it's a chuk. It's inexplicable. We don't understand it. God's running the show. That's one aspect. That's one aspect. And therefore, it says the following. At the end of days, Hashem is going to reveal the meaning of the red heifer. Exactly how it works. It's not going to be a chuk anymore. We're going to understand it. This defiles the pure and purifies the defiled. Hashem's going to explain it. Okay. It also says that in the future we're only going to say one bracha, while as now we say two different brachas for different types of tidings we get. And what I'm saying is the following. When a person gets good tidings, they say the bracha, Baruch Hatoiv Vameitiv. Right? Blessed are you, is good and gives good. And Chas V'Sholom, we shouldn't know from it. But if we hear bad tidings, there's a blessing. We should never have to say, Baruch Dayan Emes. You are the truthful judge. Because in this world, things appear good and things appear bad. You know what? In the future world, times of the Mashiach, there's only going to be one bracha. Hatayiv Vameitiv. What looks like bad, and what looked like bad in our personal lives and in the history of Israel, we're going to see. We're going to see clearly, without a shadow of a doubt, that it was for our ultimate benefit. And we're going to say, Baruch Hatayiv Vameitiv. On good and bad. And it's really Gemara. Chayav Adam Levarach Al Rakish Levarach Al Taif. A person has to bless on the bad like he does on the good. We look at it bad. We're going to see then it's all good. Therefore, at that time, the lesson, the reason, the ta'am of the Para Aduma, the red heifer, is going to be revealed. Because that statute, which represents why do bad things happen to good people, we're going to see it wasn't a statute. That question wasn't a question. Because we're only going to say one bracha. What looked like bad, we're going to see it's good. We're going to understand why these things are happening. Bad things are happening to righteous people and good things are happening to bad people. The reason for the paraduma is going to be revealed. We're only going to say one bracha. We'll see that the bad was really good. So you see how that's all interconnected. But for right now, we have to realize that the answer, the real answer for every Tzoras, for the Holocaust, for the Inquisition, for bad things happening to good people, is Zeis Chukas HaTorah. There's certain things you got to know that are the cheshbon of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's his calculation, and you're not going to understand. Maybe it's a test of faith. Maybe that's part of the answer. Maybe it's just none of our business. Maybe we did it. That's a very good possibility. we sinned. Okay, but the bottom line is Zeis Chukas HaTorah. That's one insight into Zeis Chukas HaTorah. Why it says Zeis Chukas HaTorah and not Zeis Chukas HaPara. The other one is to teach you that all the mitzvahs of the Torah are really a chuk. You keep Shabbos, you keep kosher. Anything you do, it's really a chuk. All of it. Gezeres HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Unklus translates this. Da Gezeres Araisa. This is the decree of the Torah. It's all decrees of the Torah. And it's beautiful. We've said it here before. The reason? You want to know a reason for a mitzvah? We have a whole big book called Reasons for Mitzvahs. It's called Ta'amei Mitzvahs. You know what that also means? You know what ta'am means?
Ta'am, it means taste.
Taste. A taste. Isn't that beautiful? You get it? All the reasons for the mitzvahs are just a taste. It's just a taste. But that's not the real reason why we do it. It's just a taste, so that some things, Kosh Book makes it more palatable, whatever. Okay, but the real reason, it's a chuk. It's a decree from the king. Who ever heard of a king? You know, we don't understand the concept of a king of flesh and blood. But back then, a king of flesh and blood gives you an order. You don't say, well, why do you want that done? I mean, you get to ask that question once, and then it'd be hard to talk without a head on your shoulders.
Tame also means it pure.
Right, no, but different. Ta'amei, yeah. So there it is. It's the decree from Hashem. By the way, that's a separate chiddush why Hashem gives us reward for mitzvahs. Same thing. You do the order of the king, you don't deserve reward. If you don't do it, you deserve death. We're spoiled. We don't understand that. Okay? All the Torah is really done. Zeis Chukas HaTorah. That's why it's worded like that. Because it's all a statute. We don't understand it. There's millions, millions and millions of reasons for the mitzvahs. We get a few glimpses, right? A few tastes. tamei mitzvahs. Bottom line, it's a chok. There's so many hidden mystery, unbelievable deep insights in the Torah that we don't have any concept to. There's sections in the Talmud that don't seem any relevance to us whatsoever. For example, there's a case of a boy, ben sarer murder, between the ages of 12 and a half and 13. I think it's even a shorter span. I think it's a 3-month span. If he sins in a certain way where he drinks and he eats meat gluttonously, you know, all these things, you put him to death. Right? There's another section of Gomorrah, an idol-worshipping town, you completely wipe it out. Gomorrah says on both these cases, there never, one opinion is, there never was such a place, there never was such a boy, and there never will be. But it's there. It's a mitzvah. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. So you see, there's some real deep divine wisdom, besides all the mystical aspects, right? That, you understand? Even though to us, we look at those mitzvahs, and that's not practical. That's the worst word you could use in Judaism. That saying, because my mind doesn't grasp it, it's not practical. What an arrogance. It's an arrogance we have, isn't it? You can say that. Okay? Okay. We're going to, Perry's saying very good. It says, Zayis Chukas HaTorah. We're saying the future will reveal it and it won't be a chok. The Torah says it's a chok. That means the Torah's not going to change. So, I don't know what that means. Good question. Maybe a certain aspect of it will always remain a chok. Maybe there's a certain aspect of mitzvahs we'll never know, even during times of the Mashiach, even in the future world. There are certain, you know, depths that, being that it's the wisdom of Hashem, will even at that time, with pure body and soul in complete harmony, still be in the area of a chok. I don't know. I didn't see anything. That's a good question, though. It's a good question. Okay. So, I guess you're right. It's not every single thing. It says, at that time, Zmanahu lo ye'od kash at tzaddik v'ralo. There won't be a question anymore of a tzaddik and bad things happening to him. So maybe it's that aspect of it. Okay, in other words, you know, we make the mistake of looking at everything black and white. It's either a chok or it's not. So, you know, a certain part of the mitzvah could remain a chok, you know, 10 millionths and 990 could be, you know, given over to us. You know, I guess, I don't know. It'll be interesting. We'll have to, it'll be worthwhile to be around. Wait and see. Coming attractions. Okay, let's move on. This is beautiful. Kedushas Levi says on this, I believe Yitzchak Kedushas, he says a beautiful thing. Zayis Chukas HaTorah, the general rule is, Kitame Torah v'mitzvahs hem na'almim kol Adam. The reason for Torah mitzvahs is completely hidden from all man. Raka Adam sarech la'asa l'kem kol HaTorah machmat tzivu Hashem. But that a person is supposed to do the mitzvahs because Hashem commanded it. And that's what it says in this verse. Zayis Chukas HaTorah asher tziva Hashem l'mor. That God commanded. Okay, that's the reason that you do the mitzvahs. The all chukim, Hakol chukim etzleinu, okay, ki ein nigla lana shum tam, it's not revealed to us the reason, but know that the main reason we do mitzvahs, and the highest reason we do mitzvahs, is Hashem, atziva Hashem lemor, Hashem said, commanded to do, okay? Okay. So he also gives an example of a king of flesh and blood. If he gives a reason to do, if he gives a commandment to a mitzvah, a command, az bevada ein mish yar yivakish machshvlo shal melech, no one's going to have the chutzpah to ask the king, what exactly did you have in mind when you told us to do this? You know, no one's going to do that. But everybody will just do what he says. The same way, that's how we have to serve Hashem and do his Torah and mitzvahs. Okay? He is HaMelech, the king. With all that, of course, we sit there and we learn. That's what we do. We learn and we learn and we learn. And we try to understand more of the depths and the brilliance of the Torah. One doesn't contradict the other. We love the Torah so much, and we love serving Kodesh Baruch Hu so much, that we try to understand more of what we're doing. But we don't base, very important, we don't base whether we're going to do or not do according to our understanding. Okay? That's very important. No matter what, we're going to do the Torah. We'd like to understand and get more of a geschmack in it, right? More of a tam, a taste. Okay? That's the idea. Okay. So therefore, says the Kedushas Levi the following. Therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave a certain mitzvahs that, even though all the Torah is a chok, but certain mitzvahs, mamish, you can't even pretend to understand. Like this one, it seems like a complete contradiction, defiling the pure, purifying the defile, right? So therefore, you recognize that a man is doing the mitzvahs, that you're doing the mitzvahs because Hashem commanded you and not because it makes sense. Just like Shalosh Shudas. Shalosh Shudas is called three meals. It really should be called Seudah Shlishit. It is actually in Israel. Okay, but Shalosh Shudas, the third meal, is because it's like all three meals in one. Because that shows, right, that a person did the first two meals, not because he was hungry. Friday night, everybody eats a dinner. Shabbos afternoon, everybody eats a lunch. Shalosh Shudas is not a time you normally eat. That shows you did all three meals because God commanded. So too, God gave certain mitzvahs, a chok, that wool and linen together, shatness, this paraduma. So now it becomes obvious, God gives you like the benefit of the doubt, that all the mitzvahs you're doing is because, you know, it's not because you understand them, because obviously you're doing this mitzvah, which you can't possibly be understanding. Yeah? Am I clear? Or is it confused? You know what I'm saying? Okay. We don't know when this portion of the Torah came up. It says the portions of the Torah, the Torah is not a chronological order. If a person knew the chronological order of the Torah, the parshias of the Torah, when I say parshias, the sections of the Torah, doesn't mean the way we have it broken down. Right? In this parsha, there could be several parshias. You understand? If a person knew the right chronological order, they could do, get out of the garbage! God don't know what they're doing. The chapter number system, I don't like using it. Real rabbis go around saying in Sheni, in Chamishi, they don't use the chapter. And we do it for convenience. But they forced us to put it like this. So we have debate. They forced us into debates, which was a lot of fun. If we win, we got killed. And, you know, at any rate. But the bottom line here is, I forgot. If we knew the right chronological order of the parts of the Torah, we'd be able to do resurrection of the dead. God hid it on purpose. So we don't know why this came up. We have a certain hint. With Korach, you know, that this will answer to Korach's question, you know, that don't be such a chacham. But that's a weak answer for you, actually. There's a lot more to it. Okay, chapter 20, verse 13, let's move on. Let's do some Rashi's. Chapter 20, verse 13, Asher Ravo B'nei Yisrael Es Hashem, that the children of Israel argued with Hashem. So again, chapter 20, verse 13, they were arguing with Moshe at this point, and yet the verse says that they argued, B'nei Yisrael argued with Hashem. So, forgive this Rabbi Feldman. Kola Oysa Mariva Im Ravo. Whoever disagrees or argues with his rabbi is as if he argues with Hashem. I have to give that to Rav Ilan. Okay? Alright, but that's true, because you got to recognize the Rav is a divinely appointed ambassador of Hashem. Especially when we talk about Moshe and the prophets. But yes, to this day, our leader of Jewry, our Gedalim, right? Rav Shach, Rav Pam, etc., right? And yes, in your community. It's no accident Rabbi Feldman is the more the Asra. He is the Torah leader in this community, right? Whatever it is, in Baltimore, Rabbi Heinemann, whatever it is, these people, you know, they have a certain Seder Shemayah, Hashem's pointed them, and you have to understand that we have a hint of this in the Torah. It says, Hashem spoke to Moshe, what is it saying? In other words, whatever the future Ravs are saying is as if Hashem spoke to Moshe. We have to understand that. We have to understand that. They're not speaking from their own mind. All right, they're speaking from a chain link, from their Rav to their Rav, all the way back to Mount Sinai as a direct conduit. And by the way, that's one of the big problems that happened during the Holocaust. Part of that chain link was severed. Okay? All right, so let's move on. Chapter 20, verse 10, we're going to talk now about, you know, Moshe's sin, if you will, quote unquote, and try to understand what that's all about. Okay, first of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe calls them Hamorim, you know, you rebels. Morim es Moreim, you're trying to, like, teach your teachers. It's Mamish, this generation. So, my Roth has his opinion, Rashi has his opinion, I got my opinion. People actually fight with the Rebbeim today. You know, it used to be when a rabbi zucked something, he said something, that's it. My Roth said it, and that was it. It was like from Mount Sinai, because it is like from Mount Sinai. But here it is. Moirim is Moraim. They're trying to teach their teachers. Mamash, we live in a generation of tremendous chutzpah. There's no such thing as respect or authority, nothing. And in the secular world, it's a filter down. They call the professors in the secular colleges by their first names. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's like, yeah, you go around calling your president Bill, whatever you think about him, or try not to, right? But still, the idea he is supposed to be the president, you shouldn't call him Bill. You know, at best, it should be Mr. Okay, but at any rate, that's the problem today. No respect. Okay. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, let's look at it. Guys, inside, let's all look at it together. Let's try to figure this out. Chapter 20, verse 21. Okay? Chapter 20, verse 10. Okay. And it says, I'm going to back up one more. Verse 9. Okay? I'm such a liar. Verse 8. Here you go. I really mean it this time. I never lie more than 5 times in a row. That's my limit. Okay, here we go. Chapter 20, verse 8. Hashem tells Moshe, Kach es hamateh, take the staff and gather all of Israel, and you and Aaron, your brother, speak to the rock, okay, and it will give forth water. Okay. Now, the question is, obviously, why Kach es hamateh, take the staff? If he's told to speak to the rock, why do you need to take the staff? Now, you do remember earlier we had a similar incident where Moshe is told to strike the rock. This is a second of a similar incident. That time he was told to strike the rock, everything went hunky-dory. Here he's told to speak, but he's told yet to take the staff, which is an interesting dilemma. Why is he told to take the staff? So this is the way all the commentaries grapple with this problem. But the idea is the following. First of all, let's understand why it was considered such a sin. It seems like if Moshe spoke, and they say he's speaking words of Torah to the stone, and the stone would have obeyed and brought forth water, it would have been, says the Or HaChaim, a tremendous sanctification of God's name. Here, an inanimate object, Rashi also says this, an inanimate object is listening to God. How much more so do we have to? But the Or HaChaim goes a step further and says the following, that, you know, what happened with the spies, what happened with the golden calf, is we lost some emunah, some faith in God. Every time you do a sin, you lose faith in God, right? That's basically how you do the sin. If you have pure faith, you would never sin. So, this was an opportunity to create such a miracle through an inanimate object, right, that to recite a parak, a chapter of Mishnah or something over it, right, that this would root within us the missing emunah, the faith that we lost with those other mistakes, to such a degree that we would have a tremendous level of faith nishrash within us, rooted within us, for all future generations. And then Moshe and Aaron would have been able to enter the land of Israel, and Moshe would have built the holy temple, and there would have been no worry about Israel sinning, because that would have been the generation that Ben David, the Mashiach, would have come. And that would have been it. Such faith could have been drilled in to Israel by this act. That's what the Or HaChaim says. So, Moshe Rabbeinu had, according to one commentary, the following cheshbon. Hashem instructed me to take the staff, which means the following. And you got to understand something. There's several times, at least 4, that Moshe does things unauthorized by God. God gives him a hint, and he hopped, and he did it. Right? They had to come from pure love. Breaking the tablets was one of them. He wasn't told to do that. That's, you know, pretty good thing to do if you think about it, you know. It was right. So here, too, why would God tell me to take the staff? It must be an option. There was a time before they sinned. Remember, this is a sin. They're complaining. It's a sin. And I had to strike the rock. Now, it means the following, maybe. if they're on a high enough level of emunah of faith, it means they are meriting a open miracle where I can talk to the stone. They're on such a level of faith that it will affect the physical inanimate world where I can talk to a physical rock and it'll give forth water. You understand? According to our level of faith and spirituality, we can affect the physical world, cause the splitting of the sea, cause miracles. That's what you can do if you're on such a level. But if they're not on such a level of faith, and they're not meriting to have an open miracle, and I talk words of Torah, or I speak to the rock, it's not going to give forth water. It's going to be a chilul Hashem. God forbid, it's going to be a desecration of God's name. Because I'm the mouthpiece of God. I am doing, they know I'm doing pure instructions from God. I'm speaking to the rock. I'm going to look like a false prophet. It's not going to bring forth water. Therefore, God must have instructed me, kach es hamateh, take the staff. And like, it's up to you. If they're on a high enough level, speak to the rock. And it'll bring forth water. If they're not, then the miracle has to be lessened. It'll still be a miracle. But you got to admit, striking the rock for water is less of a miracle than speaking to the rock. Moshe determined by their actions and their sins that they were on a lower level. And he struck the rock. Okay? And therefore, it didn't bring forth water the first time. And he struck it again and brought forth water the second time. So now it's very good. We understand why he was told to take the staff. Because he was afraid if they weren't on the right level, speaking to the rock wouldn't work. And would create a desecration of God's name. Okay, so then you might ask, why was he punished? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu punished? Okay? So, to answer that, I'm going to turn to several commentators. First of all, before I even turn to those commentators, I want you to know from the Chiddush Arim, listen to this. It says, trying to explain the quote-unquote sin of Moshe, V'hagam ki chutzpah la'oyen b'mash nechshav chet l'moshe b'aron. It's a chutzpah for people like us to look in and to try to figure out what's considered a sin for Moshe b'aron. It's mamash a chutzpah. U'b'vadai she'i efshar l'anashim k'moini l'argish klosh k'shezechet. And for sure it's impossible for men like me, said the Chiddush Yerim, the great Chiddush Yerim, to even largish clout, to even feel that this was any sort of sin. Okay, at any rate, since the Torah gave us permission to delve into and figure out what the sin was, then I'm going to open my mouth and tell you my opinion. Okay, but he prefaces this with a trepidation. I mean, if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't think it was a sin, how can we sit there, you know, interpret a sin? So first, I want you to understand that. Now we're going to go into a couple of the commentaries. Okay, and this one says the following. Oops. Ramban says it's because he got angry. Nachman says he got angry. And it's just, you look at the verses and it says that Shmuna Moirim, Moshe Rabbeinu calls him. He says, you know, like, you rebels, from this rock shall I take out forth water? He speaks very harshly to him, and then he lost his temper. Okay, that's Nachmanides' opinion. Okay. Rabbi Hananel says the following, that Moshe Rabbeinu used an improper words. At the end of verse 10, he says, Noitzi lachemayim, shall we take water out of this work? Shall we take water out of this rock? Shall we? He should have said, shall God? We. So he was punished. Okay, that's Rabbi Hananel's answer. Okay, and then there's the answer that he hit the rock, you know, we all know, instead of speaking to it, right? Okay. Then the Yalkut says the following. With all these answers, it says, following, you know what? The bottom line is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevakesh alilo sha'az Moshe b'Aaron yachol lahani dora dea le'eret Yisrael b'imei HaMashiach. Hashem was looking for an excuse to have Moshe and Aaron die in the desert with the people, so when it comes time for the Mashiach, he can lead his people. His people. The one he took out of Egypt, right? The one he went with. He should die with them. It's only right. He's their shepherd, and he should take them into the land of Israel. That's what he says at the end. All this, it's really, It's like a divine decree, so to speak. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu is very, we all know the other rule, that Kadosh Baruch Hu judges people by a fine hair. The ones that are close to Hashem, he judges like a fine hair. Right? That, we learn it from here. Moshe, this is like, this seems like such a small, small thing, and Moshe Rabbeinu is punished so greatly. From here, we have the rule that Tzadikim Kechut HaSaira, they're judged like a fine hair, because a lot is expected from him. So therefore, for anybody else, this wouldn't have been sent for Moshe Rabbeinu, for other various reasons, right? He had to die in the desert, right? Alright? And, for his level, okay, so that's it. Again, hey, if it seems vague, and I'm leaving it vague on purpose, because it's a sin on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, and again, like the Chiddush Harim says, we should be very respectful of that commentary. Who are we to look, you know, and judge about that? Now, a couple things from Rabbi Grossman, who says the following. We're going to move on in the Torah portion, and we're going to talk about this battle of Sichon V'Og. Okay? Okay, before we get there, I want to tell you, before we get to Rabbi Grossmeir, I want to tell you, chapter 21, verse 1, when we talked about the Kanaani, Melech Arad, seeing that the clouds of glory departed and he fought with Israel, I want an interesting insight. It says that we prayed to Hashem, this is chapter 21, verse 2, we actually made a vow, if you give us this nation in our hands, we'll utterly ban everything in their city and completely destroy it. Consecrate everything in the city. We're getting physical benefit. We're doing this strictly, you know, L'shem Shemayim war. Interesting, when you pray, you should be as specific as possible. Normally, they would have said the name of the nation. They didn't say the name of the nation, and there's a reason for it. It says, Canaan, what do? They really spoke one language and dressed like another. You hear? They were trying to fool Israel. It's amazing. You see that even wicked people knew the power of spirituality, that when Israel prays to God, right, for the Canaani to be delivered in their hands, it won't work. Because you know who these were? Amalek. This wasn't Kanani. What did they do? They changed their language. And, okay, their clothes were the clothes of Amalek, but their language, they spoke the language of Canaan. So we didn't know who they were. Right? Therefore, if we prayed for Canaan to be sent in our hand because they sound like Canaanites, the prayer would not have been answered. Prayer has to be very specific. It's amazing. Evil people knew this. Okay, so the question is the following. If they really wanted to fool us, change your clothes too. You change your language to Canaan, change your clothes also to look like Canaan. You hear? So it's unbelievable insight, says the Chiddush Harim. He says, you don't understand, if they would have changed their language and their clothes to Canaan, they would have been Canaan. We would have prayed to deliver Canaan in our hands, and it would have happened. Because, hear what he's saying? Your language and your clothes makes you the nation. Your external formats of how you represent, you know, or assimilate into the culture, that's what you represent. If you think it's a far-out idea, the Medrash says clearly why we were merited to come out of Israel. Three things. You remember, according to a different opinion, Medrash 4, we didn't change our Jewish names, we kept the Jewish language, and we kept our Jewish clothes. Because why? Because we look like Jews. Because it says we also came out of Egypt in the merit of our Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But the only way that would work if we still look like Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. If we still have a relationship to them. If we spoke and looked like Egyptians and called our children by Egyptians' names, Chalila, we're Egyptians. We have no connection to the patriarchs anymore. You understand? So that one goes in, the merit of the patriarchs, it says, on one hand, the Medrash says. On the other hand, the Medrash says, and the merit that we kept our clothes and our language and our names. They both go hand in hand. That shows that we had a familiarity, a connection to the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and therefore we could be saved in their merit. Here too. So why am I harping on this? Why am I harping on this is because a Jew is supposed to dress like a Jew and not like an American. That's why I'm harping on this. We gotta be careful when we're in Golis. And we got to go, you know, we got to try to get along. But we don't go along to get along. You understand? You don't go along to get along. You got to be proud of your Jewish names. Okay? Jewish names, it's not so simple. You know, we know Rebbeim that go by their English names. But sensitivity, you should, you know, be proud of your Jewish name. Right? If you brought up your whole life with the name Mike, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I understand that. Okay. But the baseline is don't assimilate because they're wearing this kind of clothing, right? You're going to tell me we all basically wear the same clothing. True and not true. There are certain things they do because it's a fad, it's a culture of the time, whether it's elephant bell bottoms or, you know, or real tight slacks, whatever it is, right? To dress like the goy and to talk like the goy, which can mean the goyish expressions. Right? Their expressions, then you're a goy. You're identifying with a goy. You want to identify with a goy. Listen, whether you agree with Hasidim, whether you're attracted to that lifestyle, whether you're not attracted to that lifestyle, one thing you've got to have a tremendous respect for, they don't want to look like goyim. They speak Yiddish. Because that's a Jewish language. Right? They dress in clothes that their ancestors wore for 100 years. Because that looks like a yid. They wear payas and they wear beards because that looks like a yid. So what, I don't know whether you can relate or not, whatever it is, it's irrelevant. But that you got to respect. They have Jewish pride and they want to look like a Jew and they want to have nothing to do with looking like a goy. Doesn't mean we don't go around hating the goy. Well, we don't go around imitating them either, right? You can like a cat, but you don't want to go around imitating it. You understand? Okay. Now, with that, now let's go into this, the battle of Sichem Nog, and then we're going to finish up. Right. Here it is. Now, towards the end of the Parsha, right? I'm the only person that interrupts myself. I forgot about the furious serpents. The furious serpents, how did that work? I don't want to leave that question unanswered, right? They were up there, and it says when you looked at them, you know, you were healed. So the Gemara says, what's going on here? The serpents have the power to heal? Says, no, what it means is when you look down, they're in the sky. So Israel turned their hearts to heaven. They thought of Hashem, and they prayed to Hashem, and they were healed. Right? That's what it means. The idea is the following. So you'll ask, let them just turn their eyes to heaven and pray to Hashem. Forget about the serpent. The idea is, in life, you're going to do hishtaglus. You're going to do natural efforts. You're going to use refuahs. You're going to use aspirin. You're going to go to doctors. You're going to, you know, chalila, have surgeries. You're going to do certain medical procedures. You're going to look at the copper snake. Those are the medical procedures. Fine. You got to do those things. Fine. But don't ever forget who's behind those procedures, who's behind the medicine, and that's your Father in heaven. So that's the idea. Yes, they looked at the copper snake, but that's when they were mishtabed libam l'shamayim. They put their hearts in heaven, right? They recognize, you know, whatever physical means you do for the ends, right? You recognize these are just agents of God. That's the idea, okay? That the real refuah is coming from Hashem, and that He wants us to use, you know, way of nature type of things, okay? So that's the real source is there. So that's what it is. They looked at that, but they recognize the real source is from Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, now, let's go to Sichem Nog. When they sang the song on the whale, right towards the end of the Parsha, right before Shvi, okay? Right before Shvi, they sang the song on the whale. Why did they sing this? What happened at this precise moment, and what's going to happen with the Battle of Sichem are somehow, in a way, related. They are juxtaposed to each other. Now, what happened was, if you look at the Rashi there, it's an amazing thing. What happened was that the nations gathered on either side to attack us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused, they were hiding in the crevices of the mountain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused these mountains to come together. And they had like projections, you know. And they crushed these people that were going to ambush us. They were waiting around to ambush us. And their bones and their limbs and the blood all fell into the well. This was not a normal well, by the way, that followed us. as you see from the song, we drew a line and we had a stream, like a little creek, going to each tribe. Each tribe had their own little creek going to them, right? And all of a sudden we looked, and there was this water, all this blood and limbs of people that are trying to kill us. And we sang the song. Why? Because we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from what we didn't even know was a threat. There was people threatening our lives, trying to destroy us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us again, and we didn't even know about it. Okay? So, this shows you, this is just an example of how many times HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us from enemies and plots that we don't even know about. That's why it says at the end of days, it says, Halu Hashem Kol Goyim, that we said in Halo, that all the nations of the world would give praise to Hashem. So once a great, Caesar, I think, or some Goy there, asked, I think Rabbi Yeshua, I can't remember, one of our sages from the Talmud, why does it say that? Why does it say that? I mean, in the times of Mashiach, when you'll be saved, certainly you'll sing praises to God. And he said, not like you will. That's what he means. It's because you know about all the plots that you've had against us, and that how somehow God miraculously foiled these plots at the last minute. We don't even know about them. We never knew about them. He says, you're right. As by my life, there's many times we try to destroy it, all of a sudden something always comes up. This was in the Roman times. Right? Here's an example. So many of the hashkocha pratis, the personal supervision over us. Yeah, Holocaust was terrible. But did you ever think how it represents the indestructibility, the invincibility of the Jewish nation? How is it possible that we're still around today? Stronger than ever after that, only 50 years ago? The million that escaped? What a miracle. Yes, 6 million perished. A million escaped? Equally great miracle. Okay? The Kadosh Baruch Hu's supervision of the Jewish people. Therefore, that's reflected next. The Battle of Sichon. We are told many years ago that Ammon and Moab are two nations you can't fight war with. You can't fight. You know why? Again, remember, we're going back to what I told you. Hashem rewards a chesed for generations, generations, generations. Lot accompanied Abraham, right? And when they got down to Egypt, Lot stayed quiet. What I mean, Hashem said, introduce Sarah as a sister. And Lot didn't say, hey, that's not true, that's his wife. He said nothing. That was considered an act of kindness. Therefore, from him, believe it or not, will come Mashiach. He had incest with his daughters. He had Moab and Ammon. Moab means from my father. Ammon, my nation. That's what it means. Right? And because of that, as a coming lot, we're not to pester their inheritance, their land, until the times of Mashiach. Then they're going to be in bad shape. Okay, so we're not to pester them, right? Because of this act of kindness. You hear this? But it goes further. It goes further. Moab, that daughter had a chutzpah. She called her child Moab from my father. Not too sneeze. That's honest. The other one had a little bit of sneeze. She said, Ammon, my nation. She didn't go around publicly broadcasting from my father. Okay? This is for you. So, I want to ask you something. Now, okay, so first of all, let's get to the historical fact. Another historical fact of Hashem. Here we see that place managers don't know about it. So here, what happened with Sichon? The Torah tells us, for some reason, you know what? Sichon had a battle with Moab, and they conquered Moab, right? This is at the end, verses 26, 27, and then we conquered Sichon and we got their land. Because really, we're not allowed to get the land of Moab and Ammon. But Hashem wanted us to have this particular land for a certain reason, so what did he do? He arranged history that Sichon battled Moab. We have no idea why. All for the purpose, because later, hundreds of years later, we're going to battle Sichon and we can get that land. So everything in history is being manipulated for the Jewish people. If you don't understand why there's a war in Nicaragua or Korea or someplace else, somehow, some way it relates to the Jew. If not now, 50 years now, 200 years from now. And here's the classic example. A war of Sichon and Moab. Who cares? Hundreds of years later, that's the land that we're supposed to get for whatever reason. Okay, now, on this idea that the daughter that had more chutzpah, Moab, right? Well, see, just for this little bit of edelkeit, this little bit of sensitivity, the daughter that called Ammon gets a reward. What is it? We're not allowed to get either one of their lands or start up with them. But Moab, we can chepa. We can, like, threaten them. We can, like, scare them. You know, you can chepa them. Ammon, you can't chepa. Can't chepa Ammon. Why? Right? Because of this. Because of this lack of modesty. Lack of modesty, my father. So I want to ask you, what's worse? If you lived in the, just waiting to use this line, Victorian age, right, where they preached a modesty, right? But as we all know, behind closed door, they did immoral things, right? The hypocrisy. Is that better? Or our generation, which in a sense is no hypocrisy. They parade all their immorality and abominations in public. They're coming out of their closets. I wish they'd stuff themselves back in there. Right? Which is worse? Torah is telling you that the Victorian age, at least to have some sneeze, you're going to do a perversion of immorality, so at least don't do it publicly. At least do it behind closed doors. Don't publicize it and parade it. Have some sense of busha, shame. No sense of shame today. Okay, that's the idea. Final thought. End of the Parsha, Og. Why did Moshe fear Og? Why do you fear Og, the giant Og, and not Sichon? Because many, many years ago, again, Hashem repays a chesed for future generations. Og, there was a battle of four kings, of five kings, right? And Lot was captured, right? Lot was captured, and one person escaped. That was Og. And he informed Avram, you know what? They captured your nephew. You know why he informed him? Because he wanted Avram to go to war with the four kings, which he did. He knew he would. Hoped he'd get killed so he could marry the beautiful Sarah. That's why he did it. Completely ulterior motives. Still, he was the messenger. He informed Avram. Avram was able to defeat four kings and get Lot back. And because this is considered some sort of act of chesed, he's rewarded, right? He has a merit to the point that Moshe was scared of him. That's why Hashem says, don't be scared of him. His merit is used up. But he had a merit, and Moshe understood it. He helped Avram. He had some act of chesed, and that could act as a shield and protection. We should get a lot of strength from this and realize when we do acts of chesed, not for ulterior motives, how much Hashem is going to reward us and our future generations for all time.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.